idea that you are what you eat might be an old cliché, but it's certainly true that a person's approach to food can tell us a lot about their background. From favourite snacks and family recipes to shared rituals and traditions, what we eat and how we eat it can reveal a lot about our history and identity. It's part of the power of Sophia Karim's Turbine Bag, a series that juxtaposes powerful messages of political dissent with the cosy familiarity of street food packaging. Cheap and accessible, the paper packets used by South Asian street sellers to wrap their samosas are transformed into the perfect portable protest tool in this extended series. Sophia uses them to campaign for the release of political prisoners in Bangladesh, a course she took up after her own uncle was incarcerated.
It was inspired initially by a protest that we had planned for Tate Modern's Turbine Hall in solidarity with huge protests that were happening in India at the time called Shaheen Bagh. And these were women-led protests, and they were fighting against anti-Muslim citizenship laws that had been proposed by the government of India.
Could you just maybe, to give us a bit of context, these samosa packets are quite a familiar sight in South Asia, as I understand it, but maybe people in the UK might not be as familiar with them. So do you want to talk a little bit about that kind of street food culture?
Yeah. So it started February 2018, and I was in Bangladesh, in Dhaka, the capital. I was with my mum, and we were outside my uncle's picture agency, and I was really hungry. So we, in Bangladesh, we call them shingara. Here they're called samosa. They're really cheap. There was a street stall on the corner. So I buy this packet, and I notice that the packet it's made of is waste paper. And all the food there is sold in these waste paper packets. And what they do is, I think they collect paper from schools, from offices, newspaper, and then there must be some factory or workshop somewhere where they're made into these packets. And then the street vendors buy these packets really cheap and sell their food in them. And the one I bought was made, I think they must have been court papers. And it was made from lists of court cases between the state and citizens. Wow. So the court hearing lists.
They just discard that.
I know. Well, the funniest one was I bought a packet of baby's bangles, and that was wrapped in a non-disclosure agreement between Hyundai Motors and Grameenphone. So, yeah. Wow. So this court one, I realised that, you know, Bangladesh is now an authoritarian state, and there are so many of these court cases now that these lists are appearing now as samosa packets. And I held on to this packet, and I became obsessed with this packet. And that night I took it to like my mum's flat and put it on the balcony, and the sun was setting, and I began photographing it. And I had this curious kind of charge, this packet. And I thought, you and me are going to go on a journey, I think. But I don't know what that journey is yet. And then I came back to London and I had it in my suitcase. And I wrote to my aunt and I said, I'm obsessed with these packets. I also liked them as physical objects. And I liked the proportion and I liked the smell and the texture. So I was like, can you collect some more for me? I'm very intrigued by these. So she went round wherever, markets, whatever. She collected about 100 of them and sent me them. And I saw that some were made from kids' homework, some were made from old textbooks. And the ones that were from kids' textbooks had a lot of kind of nationalist propaganda on them. And some were from newspapers. And I realised that much of the news is censored. And collectively, these things were produce a sort of portrait of the country in a way. So for a while, I was just photographing them and exploring them as material objects, because also the paper's so soft and lovely and these old kind of objects. And I was filling them with rice, and I loved the smell of the rice, and I was photographing them. And they were very beautiful in natural light, the way light shone through them, these kind of dusty old packets. And then I forgot about them. And then in August 2018, when my uncle was jailed, I suddenly remembered that first packet. And I thought, I wonder if your court case will ever appear on a samosa packet. And then, for whatever reason, on his 100th day of jail, I went into my studio again for the first time to work, and I hadn't wanted to go in that studio for all those days because it reminded me of him. And I had put candles in the packets and I was photographing them next to photographs of my family and him. And I thought, I'm going to make my own packets with my own version of the news about him and what's happening. And I began making packets then, and that's really how it started. And they were made using throwaway paper, my mum's old home, half-broken, crappy printer. And I did a call out on Instagram to artists from India, Bangladesh, but then lots of other artists joined in, some, you know, from America, from UK, everywhere, to send me their artwork, or writers were sending pieces of writing. And then I was printing them out on my mum's printer, on kids' homework, my mum's old song notes, any old paper from cupboards.
You mentioned earlier there was a protest in the Turbine Hall, but where else have these kind of appeared? Have they actually had light samosas in them and been going out anywhere? Or
for a while, my dad was eating crisps out. he was like sitting in front of the telly. And then I was like wrapping my kids' packed lunch in these packets, giving them out as gifts to friends. I still never sent them out back to protest. The whole turbine bug thing happened. So basically, in December 2019 and January 2020, these mass protests had broken out in India against the anti-Muslim citizenship laws. So we planned this protest in the Turbine Hall of Tate Modern. So we being myself and many activists. So I did this call out to artists, and I was really surprised. Loads responded and sent their artworks. And I made all these samosa packets. And the idea was that we were going to display them as a protest in the Turbine Hall around a ring of rice. And many of the protest songs that were being sung in India then were going to be sung. And then the idea was that they would then be sent back to the Shaheen Bagh protest so that they could see the solidarity movements that were happening around the world. And the reason I had thought of using these packets as the protest art for that was because I'd read this article where apparently food was really important in the Shaheen Bagh protests, and a common greeting was, "Have you eaten?" as the first thing. And apparently the food was so great, even the policemen were coming to eat that food. So that's why I thought, well, why, as a form of protest art, why don't we make these samosa packets? And then 2 days before the Turbine Hall thing was going to happen, the museum shut for COVID. And then the Shaheen Bagh protest site itself was shut down by the Indian government as the pandemic happened. But by then it didn't matter because this platform was running and people began contacting me saying, so-and-so's in jail, can you help? And I just mobilised that group to continue making work.
And what happened with them, I guess, like while you were all in lockdown, were you sharing like photographs of them? How did it?
Yeah, so they were in my studio, so they were in isolation as well. And then within about a week or so of this, I heard about photojournalist Kajol. He'd been disappeared. I was with my daughter and I was trying to do homeschooling with her. We were bored out of our mind, both of us. So I was like, I've had enough of this. I'm going to start engaging her in my work. That's also educational. So I was like, Lila, you know, Kajol got disappeared. Let's make a samosa packet. So she helped me and we made a samosa packet. And then she was quite excited and I put it on Instagram. And I didn't think anything would happen, but she thought big things would happen. And then lo and behold, I got a message and it was from a young man and he said, "That's my dad. Kajol is my dad." So I said, "Well, can we help you? What's happening?" And he was in a very difficult place because people couldn't physically protest and he didn't know what to do. So then I got all the artists that we'd been working with and I said, guys, can you help us campaign for Gajal? So what was brilliant was that all the Indian artists began campaigning for Gajal, who's in Bangladesh. And my daughter was like, see, I told you something would happen. And so then we've started campaigning on Where is Gajal? And you'll see that packet in the exhibition. And then amazingly, 53 days later, Gajal was so-called found. He was found blindfolded and handcuffed on the Bangladesh-Indian border. But I mean, even that was amazing that he was found, because not many people who had disappeared are found. And then he was subsequently jailed. So the slogan changed from Where is Gajal to Free Gajal. And eventually he was released on bail.
That's incredible. Like that, you know, you don't often think about when you're kind of doing art and creative things, you know, it's hard to think that it's going to have that kind of an impact, isn't it, quite often? So yeah. It must be amazing feeling for you when things like that happen.
It is, because however bleak things are, I now realize that there are, you know, some of these prisoners that we've been campaigning for have been released, and it's got to be worth fighting. You know, it's this dual hope and despair thing all the time. And I think, you know, Gramsci wrote about this. I think he wrote about pessimism of intellect and optimism of will, in the sense that, or the way I interpret that, I don't know if I'm right, is that anyone in their right mind would be pessimistic about what's happening at the moment. It's terribly bleak and we're at the edge of an abyss, but at the same time, you have to have optimism to fight. Without optimism, you can't fight. And somehow, whether it's magic or God knows what, there are cases where I never expected someone would be released and they were, and they're still alive.
Amazing. You mentioned a bit earlier about how food was a really important part of these protests. I wonder if you know, if you think there's a reason for that, like why that became such an important thing for them.
Everyone loves food. And I think, well, number one, I don't think it's quite rare to ever get a bunch of South Asians together and there not to be food. I think anywhere where South Asians are congregating, food's going to appear at some point. Even I was talking with my sisters the other day and we were like, every time you meet a Bangladeshi, the conversation turns to food in the end. But also it's, I think in Shaheen Bagh, these women-led protests, you were getting many generations of women. And that's why I find those protests very, very inspiring. So I hadn't seen anything as progressive in Western feminism as that. Some of the packets you'll see are the dadis, who are the grandmothers of Shaheen Bagh. And then you were getting children, the aunties, young women. And they created this sort of social space where you were having schools, cooking, art, learning happening in this one protest site. And I guess you're probably getting a lot of very interesting types of food and cooking coming out of that. And everyone gets excited about trying that. The other thing is that food's been massively important within my family as well. So when my uncle was in jail, we'd have campaign meetings in my mum's house in London. And she, in spite of her huge despair and distress at that time, never stopped cooking. And she'd cook this amazing food. And then all our friends would come to those campaign meetings just to eat. So we'd be campaigning and strategizing, and you're kind of crying and eating at the same time.
It's one of those things you do as well, isn't it? Like when something terrible happens, like people come and bring you food quite often.
Definitely.
They don't know what else to do, right?
That's right. And, you know, we have a tradition where if someone dies, then for 40 days you send them food, and so that they don't have to cook. So my studio is in my mum's house, and her kitchen's right next door. So often the two things merge. So her and my daughter would often be filling these samosa packets with rice. Or
I love that parallel as well. Like, you're talking about these women in South Asia making these kind of community spaces where there's different generations of women and they're learning and stuff. And at the same time, you've got your relationship with your daughter and working together on that packet and that project kind of started this whole journey your end as well.
Yeah, that's right. Because I can remember when I was doing the idea for the Tate Modern exhibition at the Turbine Hall, I had a eureka moment of how to display those packets when I was watching my mum and my daughter making these pastries out of rice, and they were in the kitchen. And there was this one point where the sort of sun was setting and it shone on my mum and my daughter, and all this rice flour just blew up into clouds. It was the most beautiful thing. And watching that, I suddenly had this vision that I'm going to do a ring of rice on the floor, and then there can be a chorus of people around that ring of rice and they can sing the songs. And then the packets can be in the middle. And how do you support the form of the packet to keep it open? I can half fill each packet with rice.
I also think there's something interesting about, you know, when we're talking about kind of political prisoners and things like that, it's about these ideological divisions, I suppose. But what you said straight away when I asked you about food was everyone loves food.
Mm.
And is there something about it being a bit of a leveller and a connector, I suppose?
Yes. So I'll tell you, because you mentioned the political prisoners, there's some interesting things. So one of the BK16 prisoners who was released, she talked about how on the prisoner's birthday, they would make a birthday cake for the prisoners, and how they'd be really resourceful about what ingredients to use to make that birthday cake. And Aaron Ferreira has a section in his memoirs about how they would catch certain rodents or things in the prison. I know. But to them, that was a treat where they were going to cook that together. And I can't remember how they made the fire or... And then Father Stan Swamy, who died, they talked about how I think they would sit around and eat peanuts together, and he loved to eat peanuts, and one of his co-accused has written about that. But when Father Stan became very ill, so he was 84, and they said, his co-accused said to him, "You need to eat more," and they were really worried about him and how much he was eating, then he said, "I lived with the tribes for 50 years and I saw how much they eat, and it's about 50% of what others eat, and that's now how I eat, and that's all I need to eat."
Just extraordinary, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm also thinking about, like, you know, for example, you're saying like most of the women in these groups were Muslim, but there's others as well. Mm. And like, you know, you said obviously there's different names for samosas or whatever, but it is something that's familiar kind of across the region wherever you are as well. I really like that as an idea.
Yeah, and I think that samosa packet must be a recognisable object because some of the samosa packets became part of the permanent collection at the V&A. We donated them rather than selling them because these objects should never be bought or sold. And one of them I wanted to give was for Professor Anon Deldumde, who was still jailed at the time. And so then I made another copy of that packet and I wrote a letter to him. And I said, "This is part of the museum's permanent collection now. It's a samosa packet about you and your co-accused." And then he wrote back and he said, "My co-accused and I were really excited to see this samosa packet. It's really creative." and then I thought, yeah, they got it. They got it. They know what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I think that was all of my questions. Was there anything else you wanted to...
No, it's been a really lovely conversation. Thank you for letting me go on and on and on.
No, thank you. It's been really fascinating. Thanks.
A selection of works from Sophia's Turbine Bag series is now on display in divided cells.
which is free to visit at Coventry's Herbert Art Gallery and Museum until the 24th of September 2023. The curators are Hamad Nasser, Rosie Addenbrook and Alice Swatton. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure to check out our previous podcast with Sophia to learn more about her Architecture of Disappearance series, which also features in the exhibition. In our next episode, we'll be looking at migration and the construction of memory with video projection artist and sculptor Sophie Ernst.